Ahoy hoy, everybody. This is Bob Mackey for Laser Time's Simpsons podcast, Talking Simpsons, a weekly exploration chronologically of every Simpsons episode until the very, very end. We'll be roughly 70 years old by the time it ends.
Oh, my goodness.
I've said I'm Bob Mackey. Who else is here?
Wow, Bob Mackey!
I didn't get
forgot
those.
To, yeah, I got oh, to, forgot to play those in some of the other episodes.
I'm Henry Gilbert.
I'm Hello. Chris Antista. How is it going?
It's going great. And today we're talking about Bart the General, I believe Ooh. The fourth production episode of season one of The Simpsons, and it aired on February 4th, 1990. And what happened on that fateful day or week, Chris?
Gotta go back and... Going back again! Oh, my God! Yes, this episode aired January 21st, 1990. This was the week that Elton John and Paula Abdul teamed up for a Diet Coke commercial. The Land Before Time topped the VHS charts, and the first McDonald's ever was opened in the Soviet Union.
Wow, I thought we'd hear about Paula Abdul sooner or later.
Yes, this was her reign.
So what happened in this episode? Well, it's very simple. There is no B story, I don't think. It's just Bart.
That is weird. Yeah.
Most of these haven't had B stories.
So like Homer and Marge don't do shit.
They're so slowly paced, which is TV in 1990. But I mean, that's all that happens. Bart squares off against Nelson, which I believe is his first appearance.
We got to give this a first. And luckily, I have a sound effect. Bart meets Nelson after a run-in with Lisa's cupcakes.
Yeah, and I guess it's also the first appearance of Nelson's henchman, who you still kind of see every
fucking little
now
Mo Howard.
Yeah. There are two of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the same guy. One's white, one's black.
Terrible voices.
Ugh, they're bad.
Nelson, you're bleeding.
Nah, happens all the time. Somebody else's blood splatters on me. Hey, wait a minute. You're right. You made me bleed my own blood.
That gave me a laugh.
So, yeah,
well, it's not. I would posit. Mm-hmm. That is the oldest Simpsons reference I hear used today.
You made me bleed my own
blood.
I think so, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. God, I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, I can't think. Now, yeah, I think this has a lot of... It was also the first of Herman, who doesn't appear at all that much. I think this is also...
You mentioned that there was a tie-in to another episode about the arm.
Well, yeah, so Herman is introduced... We should start from the beginning, because
sure.
I do want to say that, first off, it's the first ever... Oh, this episode's too long. Cut the opening. Like, it's The Simpsons, cut, we're at home. Like,
yeah, there's
just goes
no...
straight to the home.
Yeah, yeah. I also think it, as far as a plot, I want to like this more because as a kid, I loved this episode. But, you know, I was bullied. And it was the idea was to band together and get over on your bully using wrestling terms in The Simpsons show. God, I'm an idiot. I did love that aspect to it. But to me, this feels like for any other, like, IP, this would have been... their movie. If you're thinking a show like Recess,
well,
like this should have been the movie.
Let me tell you what I think this episode is. Mm. It's a Rugrats episode.
Yes.
Oh,
it
man.
Opens with a weird, confusing shot of inside the oven and seeing people go in. That's the same way a Rugrats cartoon
would
open.
Wow, I didn't think of it that way.
And then to have an extensive thing where kids take on an extensive parody sequence where kids take on adult things, adult styling, except they're using water balloons instead of guns and they're replacing the things with child. Feels very Rugrats to me.
But in 1990, that was so clever.
It was. Yeah. Also clever in 1990, but I don't even want to whip out the death jingle because I don't think we have to in this episode. But Patton references.
Well, yeah.
I grew up in an era where Patton was referenced in fucking everything, and that movie is not aired. I can't imagine anybody under 20 has ever seen it.
Yeah.
It's very long, very boring.
It's all over Space Jam. I know that much.
Patton was one of those things where it seemed like it was a movie that got to everybody because hardcore conservatives could be like, yeah, this guy was an ass kicker. We got those Nazis.
Ronald, you magnificent bastard!
And then meanwhile, young people could go like, he was a punk rock in the army. He was doing the shit nobody told him to do. And you could also just appreciate George C. Scott's great acting.
Oh, he's fantastic. But I think this was the first episode that really leaned heavily into like using a film or an existing piece of media for its structure.
I was going to say that too. I think this is the first one that is lengthy film parodies, though at a certain point it becomes a mishmash of Patton and Full Metal Jacket.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there were nods to like things like Get Smart and other things in other episodes. But this one, it was full on like, here's the music from Patton, here are scenes, and then you're right, Henry. Does it become Full Metal Jacket at some point? Yeah.
Or it's just
I have the kids march chant if you want to hear it.
Gotta be an arithmetic. I gotta be an arithmetic. Woulda got an A, but I was sick. What about
neighbor?
I will sit.
I guess
we are rubber, you are glue. We are rubber, you are glue. It bounces off of us and sticks to you. It bounces off us and sticks to you. Sound off. One, two. Sound off. Three.
So when I talk about like being able to like this being appointment viewing for both me and my father for different reasons. Yeah. I'm getting off on this plot, and he's getting off on the references.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Full Metal Jacket. I haven't seen Patton. But
you're probably
six years
away from seeing either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's getting all these jokes that I'm not, and that's just that one clip is like the perfect example of that.
Also, this episode is so heavy on dream sequences in the
first
half. Yes,
it is. Yeah, that could be another Rugrats connection.
Yeah, we didn't mention it in the Bartha Jean, but that dream sequence was beautiful.
Yeah, that was actually the best animation.
Yeah, I'm sad we missed that on saying that.
Beautiful.
But, yeah.
But this one is also, and this is also a David Silverman directed one, like Bartha Genius, and I think he was so good at it.
I got a clip from the funeral.
One is the one where he's being chased by Nelson, mm-hmm. and while it's technically not the first haw-haw, he laughs a lot, and he says, haw-haw-haw-haw.
I didn't think to grab
he
that.
He is doing Nelson laughs, but
I didn't pick up on that at all. Wow.
The first Nelson laugh, I believe, is when Bart has a lemonade stand, and nobody is buying stuff, mm-hmm. and he just rides by on his bike and goes, haw-haw.
But it's weird. I think some of Nelson, though, is like, it's the character's voice who's changed the least.
Yeah,
that's true. He's kind of like full Nelson.
Am I right?
No, I need a sound effect for that.
This is why you're here. Right?
Yeah. I mean, that is what his name was based on.
Oh, you're right. Duh.
I tried looking this up today because I swear I read it at one point. It was that Nelson was inspired by Frank Miller, the comic creator.
What?
That,
really?
I remember reading this in Bongo Comics, the original Simpsons comics line. Matt Groening wrote about how much he loves Frank Miller, and then he met Frank Miller when they were kids, and then Frank Miller was his bully, and that he inspired Nelson. But I couldn't find. I swear I read this, but the internet could not give me
confirmation. The writer of The Dark Knight Returns. RoboCop 2.
Frank Miller has appeared in The Simpsons since then.
That's
but
right.
So
yeah.
has every human being.
I think
that does. Which is weirdly like, I don't even know, like, if you ever go to a party with a bunch of celebrities, is that even something to brag about? Or like, fuck, I got to do my Simpsons thing. Yeah, you got to do it if you're working for more than 5 years.
Pretty much, I think you have to put in your Simpsons time.
You got to put in your Simpsons time.
This episode, like walking into it with a modern perspective on Nelson, I felt like their treatment of bullies was a little too like on the nose. Like there was no, I mean, there was a bit of a twist.
Undercut too. He's like, I'm going to just keep beating you every day.
Bart is tormented. No one gives a shit. It's to me. The first appearance of the Skinner I like, because I love this line.
Yeah.
Oh, there's your bell. Come along now, all of you. No dawdling now.
I'll get you after school, man. But...
Oh, no. He'll get you after school, son. Now hurry up. It's time for class.
I love that. That is a good line. Well, I think the dream, if we're talking just pure funniness, the funeral dream sequence you were talking about, including Seymour in there,
it's
the funniest bit in the episode.
Yeah, I got that right here.
Goodbye, son. I guess you were right. All that homework was a waste of your time.
Thanks, Bart. We got the day off from school for this.
Yeah, and I got
first
the day
Homer
off from
screen.
Work.
Homer?
But what's a day off from work when I'm never going to see my beloved son again? Oh, Bart!
That's better, Homer.
Now, dream sequence Homer, that's supposed to be how Bart imagines him.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask that. Like,
but... if Homer did that exact thing in a scene like 6 years later, you just that's Homer. That's a Homer scene.
Yeah. I think
that's our Homer.
He does it at Aunt Gladys's funeral.
Yeah. Everyone in favor of fast forwarding.
Here's a little clip from Lisa. They're talking about the nature of being bullied. Mm-hmm.
Bart, you can't go on like this.
I know.
Why didn't you go see Grandpa?
That. What can he do?
He'll give you good advice. He's the toughest Simpson alive.
He is?
Yeah, remember the fight he put up when we put him in the home?
Joke. That joke's a normal Simpsons joke, but like a long fade out occurs after.
There's a lot afterwards. Of long fade outs. Like, there's I think one scene, it goes to commercial one time, holding on Bart's face for like 2-3 seconds.
There are some strange like commercial breaks. Usually your best joke is like right before the commercial break, you know, but at this point it was just like, we need something. But
I did really like the joke that the can rolls all the way home.
He coughs up his own hat.
And as a kid, I just thought, well, yeah, the can knew to take him home. But as an adult, I'm like, no, that's cartoon logic.
I love it, though.
I had as a note that like, Bart's funeral is really morbid, but like the fight sequences and stuff like that, there's a lot of classic cartoon elements that The Simpsons usually avoids in this episode. A lot of classic animation pieces.
Yeah, the fights are ugly, and like there's a scene of just Nelson punching Bart in the face from Nelson's perspective.
Yes.
And it is kind of like brutal.
Yeah.
Yes. It's as someone who was bullied as a kid, that was hard. Like That was a scene that was a too real moment for me when Bart comes home and he's embarrassed that he got beaten up. He doesn't want them to know. And he hides in the bathroom to cry. Like,
yeah.
He's crying in the bathtub. And then also that felt like such an outdated response too, that Homer was like, you shouldn't be crying. I'll teach you how to beat him up for the right way now.
And that's another scene where Marge just kind of like shushed and like pushed in the background. Like,
oh,
yeah.
Come on. Oh, you should talk to him. Like, Homer is just, he's sitcom dad there. He's just
for
like,
sure, yeah.
Or he's Fred Flintstone.
He's more of a Jim Belushi type, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, Jim Belushi. Well,
according to Homer.
I think it's, this is also another first, I can't believe I didn't grab it. It's the first Julie Kavner voice that's not Marge.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't
It's
have,
actually a good line. That she says, we got 20-something people here go by Grandpa. Grandpa Simpson.
Oh, ooh. Shit, yeah. I love this Grandpa clip I did grab.
Oh, good. I was going to bring this up.
It's another example of what would you say, like, characters voicing their own letters.
Now this,
yes.
Yeah, now this, be noted that this is not Grandpa's first appearance, even in production order, because he was on the shorts.
But
too.
It's like, it's
yeah.
the first one that reveals who his character is, because before he's yeah. just a surly old man. Instead mm-hmm. of like, here they add in a bit of doddering.
Yeah,
yeah.
Dear advertisers, I am disgusted with the way old people are depicted on television. We are not all vibrant, fun-loving sex maniacs. Many of us are bitter, resentful individuals who remember the good old days when entertainment was bland and inoffensive. The following is a list of words I never want to hear on television again. Number one, bra. Number two, horny. Number three, family jewel.
Looking at the environment, okay.
We have kind of gotten rid of horny, though. Like, yeah. I have to, like, force myself to say that whenever I can think
I mean, that letter he wrote is just Twitter now.
Oh, yeah. I feel like if The Simpsons hates anyone the most, it's old people.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I feel like a little more sympathy now that I'm getting older. I'm not as old as Grandpa Simpson, but it's just like, they are so vicious. But I feel like at this point, they were cutting the critics off at their knees. Like,
yeah.
This is what you're going to be saying about us. And
they imagined it. That yeah. was their imagined enemies writing into them.
And Grandpa said, like, he doesn't want to hear the word family jewels on TV, but that is said like 8 times in this episode.
They say it like yeah. a scene before, which
I didn't notice.
That was a joke as a kid I had to have explained too.
So we cut the clip off there, but like Bart runs in to interrupt him right when he says that.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But it's
Jasper's first spoken dialogue right after that.
Yeah, that's right. He wants the crossword puzzle.
Yeah. He's pretty much his voice, pretty much the exact same voice.
There is one joke on here that I feel is like not a season one joke, but something they could use later, where it's so Homer, when they're having that heart-to-heart in the bathroom, he tells Bart to kick Nelson in the balls.
Yes.
Do you have that?
I have an exchange with him in the bathroom.
So what's the problem, son?
I had a run-in with a bully.
A bully?
Come on, Marge. I don't bug
Marge
you when you're helping Lisa.
Like,
well, Bart, I hope you're going straight to the principal about this.
He's not funny
I
at all.
I guess I could do that.
What? And violate the code of the schoolyard?
This is
I'd good. Rather Bart die.
There's a great joke that I think is still good, but they would improve on it later where... Homer appears as Obi-Wan Kenobi, kind of like
that
materializes
good,
over
like
Bart's shoulder, and he's like, kick him in the family jewels. And Bart doesn't, and it doesn't work. And he looks at the thought bubble, and Homer just shrugs. And it like cuts away from Bart as he's getting beaten. And the Homer in the thought bubble is just like horrified by what he sees. So I feel like them playing with that convention was really smart and funny.
That would have been a season 2 or 3 joke. And
Just your memory, Homer. I can't give you any new information.
Though I did like in that scene right after that, one of the things, Homer, I do like classic bad advice Homer when he says, never say anything unless you think everyone else agrees with you. And like, he just lists off these terrible things.
I feel
make fun of those who are different.
I feel like Marge, they would have played up her boringness or her out of touchness more, but she's just kind of like the voice of reason, like shouting in the background. And I think like season 2, they would definitely figure out things to do with her.
So then there's Herman, who they thought was going to be a real regular on the show.
He was like the proto Dale Gribble.
The kids go to Grandpa to figure out what to do with the bully, and Grandpa's best friend is the guy who runs the Army Navy store.
The Navy
Herman.
Surplus store. So he seems like he could be the type of guy your grandpa would become friends with later. Like the kind of weird outsider your grandpa would be like.
The baby boomer,
like
the baby boomer obsessed with World War II.
Yeah. That and who appreciate it. There's a Soldier of Fortune joke in there that I did not get as a kid either. The large text edition of Soldier of Fortune.
No,
that's what Grandpa wanted.
Here's a clip of Herman, which
you
blew my mind.
He's
like
H.W.
He's doing a Herbert Walker Bush impression. Yeah. This is a joke they made about sticking your arm out the window in the previous episode.
Hello, young American.
Hello, sir. Mr. Herman?
Yes?
Mr. Herman.
Did you lose your arm in the war?
My arm? Well, let me put it this way. Next time your teacher tells you to keep your arm inside the bus window, you do it.
Now, man. I noticed that scene, the lip sync seemed so off to me that I bet that was a redo. It was one of their first redone
I think on the commentaries they said he was going to have a different explanation of how he lost his arm every time. Yeah. But, okay,
it was one of those dropped running jokes they had many of in the first
season. He was kind of a drop character, that. But, I mean, I think it was kind of weird to see a one-armed character on TV portrayed, like, as just a... I mean, he wasn't a regular guy, but he was just a character with lines.
I remember asking my dad about that. Like, what's that thing on his sleeve? I'm like... thing on his sleeve is the lack of an arm. I didn't understand it, and then like I don't just the pinning the shirt to the arm thing. I'd never seen that before this episode, and then now it's how you can very easily and cynically portray a Vietnam vet anytime you like.
Yeah, I think he is supposed to be a Vietnam vet. I think they shifted all the Vietnam vet jokes to Skinner after they got rid of him. Like here are the jokes that we can use.
The only times I can remember them using Herman past like season four is when they need a real creep to be horrible, like
someone worse than Snake.
Somebody worse than Snake, and as in the guy who will kidnap Skinner kidnap Wiggum and Snake and maybe force them to have sex with him. Like,
did he also do the counterfeit jeans thing? Was that
Yeah, Herman? He was the guest there, and he was the connection to the counterfeit jeans.
But what occurred to me is weird, because they never use him again, up to and including the episode Homer Gets a Gun, where they have an established gun salesman.
He should have been the guy,
and he doesn't buy it from Herman.
And so they had Charles Bronson voice selling to him.
Yeah, Charles Bronson.
So, I mean, Herman is a member of the NRA, I believe, in that episode.
Well, we all should be to this point. Henry, did your card come in?
Oh, boy. I turned this into five guns, and I shot him in the spine.
There are two really illegible background jokes in The Simpsons, and I feel like they would get better at these, but some are just so poorly written that you don't know that they're jokes. And two that I caught in Herman's shop for the first time were the magazine Borderline Psychotic Weekly.
Wow.
And
Duckman's Bitter Crazed Loner with a swastika.
That's even better.
I love this magazine.
And there's another one. It's Hitler's teeth are on sale in the display case. Bitter Crazed Loner is a better joke.
See,
but
they like those jokes too, several of them, that Grandpa would go there and he'd buy something crazy. Like, oh, this was Autobahn Bismarck's hat or whatever. And so it's also worth mentioning that Herman, I've heard on other commentaries but not on this one, that they felt he was partially inspired by crazy shut-in writer on The Simpsons, John Schwartzwelder, who is a big, mega conservative, or at least like libertarian-type dude, who they, on other commentaries, they mentioned that when Clinton got elected, he would try to piss off the rest of the writers and say like, oh man, in 2 years he's going to be hanging from a tree. Yeah, they're going to kill him. They're like, no, he's not. But they mentioned it on the commentary. I'm not going to repeat every story on there, but if you have the DVDs, listen to the commentaries, because it's the first time they talk about the magical man, John Schwartzwelder, who's never done the commentaries,
really?
But has written the most episodes. Technically,
but does he refuse to do the commentaries?
Yeah,
refuses. I believe Mike Scully called him on the phone during one and talked to him for like 30 seconds, and it was really awkward.
On the Cartridge Family episode.
Oh, that was it? Okay, wow.
So look that up in season 9. But yeah, that Schwarzwelder wrote 57 episodes before quitting, and he was a full-time staff writer for up to season 3. Mm-hmm. And then when they said you couldn't smoke anymore in there... He's like, then I will write from home and hand you my scripts.
Yeah,
and
if you watch Itchy and Scratchy and Marge, it is like a picture of the Simpsons writing room, and I think everyone is smoking, or there's just like a thin haze of smoke in that drawing.
Well, he's as they point out in that episode, he's one of the guys there sitting here, is drawn the fattest, and they said that in the character design that there was an arrow pointing at it that said gut. Well, meanwhile, John, I remember hearing Conan O'Brien said that Schwartzwelder look like that if you dressed him up like a 1920s police officer, he'd look like the most handsome one of those ever. And and if you've seen, there's this great picture going around like the 92 Simpsons writers room, which would really be the
tiny
93 season. Mm-hmm. So they're working on the third season. You can see there's Conan, who's like fat and greasy and ugly. And next to him is John Schwartzwelder, who's just this guy with kind of a comb over, long red hair, and like a handlebar mustache.
And now he writes detective fiction.
Yeah,
which is pretty good.
On every commentary, have you never read any of his books?
I read the first one. The Time Machine did it.
Yeah, I read
The Time Machine did it.
Yeah, it's basically great. You guys should look these up. They're on Kindle too. The Time Machine did it is a great one to start with. It stars Frank Burley.
Yeah.
Frank Burley, and he's a detective who is Homer, basically, without a family. So none of that family crap getting in the way. Just an indestructible idiot slob who has to be a detective and has no idea how to do it. And there's so many like escalating silliness jokes in there, and they're just told by text. But they're great. And they're also like 120 pages long. Yeah. You'll be done in an afternoon. Awesome.
I don't want to piss anyone off, but I think his writing is a tolerable version of Douglas Adams. I'm sorry. RIP, I know he's a dead man and I shouldn't disparage the dead.
With you, buddy. Yeah. Not everything that's silly is hilarious.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's just a quick tribute to the man of mystery, John Swartzwelder. On some commentaries, they say that the other writers have heard that they think he's a pseudonym because he's written too many and he never appears. So it must be when they get a script from somebody else, they just say it's a John Swartzwelder. Mm. But
I find this episode to be my least favorite of the first batch that we watched. Yeah.
Why is that? Is it just there are not a lot of jokes in that last part?
I think there aren't a lot of jokes to me. Like what occurred to me sort of like, I'm a big fan of Community, and maybe you listening are more caught up with that show. This seems like its first paintball episode. And that it's largely based, it has a basis on a popular film, and it's just, it thinks that is funnier than most of the jokes.
At least
that
Community like undercuts it and says, like, why are we pretending like we're getting shot?
You have to say there's a themed episode, this is the closest thing to a themed episode.
I think at least with that paintball episode, which I like, there are rules to paintball. Yeah. But there are no rules to this. Like, why is Nelson suddenly stopped by getting hit with water? Yeah, like, it doesn't make it still
that
doesn't make
would,
sense.
That
to me.
Would infuriate a bully, yeah. And he'd then punch you to death. He'd be like, "Oh, you got me wet, asshole!" Punch.
And I had written down in conjunction with this line: there are a lot of adults banding together to really hurt a child.
I love how Herman guts that Nelson effigy with the bayonet. Yeah. It's still a great joke.
I also like the line.
Sorry.
One will circle around this way to cut off the enemy's retreat. The other will drive in this way. Closing the trap. It's a classic pincers movement. It can't fail against a 10-year-old.
Nelson's at the arcade, General.
Battle station.
I feel so alive.
You know,
this
I
line takes twice
too
as long
old.
To say as it should.
I thought my time had passed. I thought I'd never hear the screams of pain or see the look of terror in a young man's eyes. Thank heaven for children.
That is the most relevant quote about war in the universe. Like,
yeah,
old men
true.
Sending boys to die.
Wow, well, that is...
I mean, that's what the episode is saying.
Yeah, totally I am giving my line of the show to Grandpa.
That was mine, too, yeah.
If I may.
That's the joke.
What's the matter with you, soldier?
It's my nerves, sir. I just can't stand the barking anymore.
Your nerves?
Oh!
I won't have cowards in my army.
Ow!
Sorry, Bart. You can push them out of a plane. You can march them off a cliff. You can send them off to die on some godforsaken rock. But for some reason, you can't slap them. Now, apologize to that boy right now.
Sorry, man.
It's cool.
Now, I wrote down for that scene that should have been Milhouse.
Yeah.
Milhouse is almost in this episode as much
as
Milhouse. No, he is. He's like, he says, lunchtime, Bart. Lunchtime. Like,
that's it, though.
And I feel like he's at the meeting, too.
Right, but he's just kind of like a background character. He's not the wussy Milhouse that we love.
But they at least gave him lines. He's not Bart the genius Milhouse. He's like, get out of here, Poindexter.
Oh, right. I forgot about
like,
that.
That fucking line. And they're playing marbles. Kids in 1990 playing.
Yeah, Glenn Shepard should have been narrating.
I think I played Jax once in 1990 and was like, why was this ever fun?
I think so. It would be like a party favor that people would give to every child at a birthday party.
Yeah.
How do you do this?
Don't
again?
Choke on these. So I guess we should talk about what happens. They eventually launch an attack against Nelson.
Yeah.
Somehow hitting with water balloons allows them to tie him up.
I did like that it was a happy birthday balloon.
Yeah, that was a good
thing. It says happy birthday.
That's what I thought was hysterical as a kid. Why did they say happy birthday? I wanted him to say death from above.
So, and then I guess they create a peace treaty, and there's a joke about Israel that I didn't realize until now. It's like Nelson recognizes Bart's right to exist, which I think was like
I didn't pick
way
up
over
on
my
that
head.
You just said
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
I didn't connect it. I knew that as like a term of some sort. They yeah, that's, I think that's kind of what frustrated me at points in this episode too, that they were on the verge, that they had some actually good satire about war, but then other times it felt like, guys, take another step forward or
I
something.
I picked that clip because it's the most heavy-handed this show ever got.
Yeah. It's all very, well, and then the end of the episode where they basically just have to say, I'm sorry, we glorified war.
It's bizarre
it's
because
a weird scene.
I think the only time it ever happens in The Simpsons, a PSA at the end with not a great joke.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, contrary to what you've just seen, war is neither glamorous nor fun. There are no winners, only losers. There are no good wars, with the following exceptions: the American Revolution, World War II, and the Star Wars trilogy. If you'd like to learn more about war, there's lots of books in your local library, many of them with cool, gory pictures. Well, good night, everybody. Peace, man.
Patton joke.
Yeah.
I really like him saying peace, man.
That to me reeks of something like the network made them do.
I think...
On the commentary, they say it was their decision.
Really?
Was it because we were going into Operation Desert Shield or Storm?
Storm.
It might have been like building up at that point. And then on top of that, it is showing children going to war, and it does make war look like it's fun, and it solves your problems.
I think they were worried, like, what are we saying with this? Let's be responsible. But they could have done it in a better, more Simpsons-y way than having the character address the camera sincerely.
This only happens in the Halloween episodes. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing
they do. That was when they were too worried again. I'm just like, oh, this is too violent.
Yeah.
Which those were needed, like, that only made me want to watch them all
me
the
too,
more.
Yeah.
And they did a Night Gallery parody, and anything you do a Night Gallery parody is worth it.
For sure.
And they said on the commentary that they animated that thing in such a way that it was not specific, so that they could they planned on reusing that animation again if they ever needed just Bart to talk. I feel like I saw that animation recycled on like a commercial for, and hey, what's Bart got to say? Guys, you should watch this season of The Simpsons. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, really? They reused it for that?
I feel like I saw that.
Be sure to save scrap metal, man.
And that they also had credits over a still image of the house instead of over black.
That was bizarre.
It's weird to see these episodes where they're just practicing, like, let's try a different way of doing the credits. How about this way? It's, you know, it is not my least favorite episode. I like it more than... I like it more than Genius and more than Homer's Odyssey.
No, Genius is my least favorite episode
I think
so far.
Video games borrowed a lot from this episode because, the first level of Bart versus the Space Mutants is reenacting this scene just with Bart throwing water balloons at Nelson. And cupcakes figure into a few other games.
We didn't even talk about how the cupcakes everywhere in this thing. They look like bran muffins. They don't look like cupcakes.
That always bothered me.
Yeah, it's the same color for the bottom and the frosting.
And with the way Lisa is like shaking the box around in the beginning, they're all ruined. They're all like flipped upside down.
That ruins...
Cupcake continuity is the most important aspect of The Simpsons.
Clearly they thought they had muffins, not cupcakes.
They were, yeah.
I watching that again, I just remembered it brought me back to childhood in that, like, there definitely was a time where the most important thing in my mind was cupcakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for the first 5 minutes, that's all Bart is preoccupied
for me
with.
It was more so that someone else got cupcakes and I didn't, and they should share with me. Though I did like...
notion that there's not allowed to be cupcakes in your vicinity that aren't in your mouth. I was definitely that kid.
I did really like Bart's exchange about I like the back and forth between Bart and Lisa of saying... Oh, now I'm not giving you one ever. And then he's like, I'm sorry. Really, I shouldn't have been so mean.
I'll do anything.
It's very, like my sister and I did things like that, so it's very observational. One thing, we didn't talk a lot about animation in this episode, and I realized, I wrote it down, like, I feel like after season one, they stopped doing so many shots that were the characters just facing the camera. There are so many shots in this episode of just, like, direct, and they don't look right. Like, your eyes don't read them as who they should be.
We were talking about the dinner table scene where it seems very stagey.
Yeah, and I think the animators are just trying to figure out how to draw these characters from different angles because
they're three quarters, they hadn't done that.
Well, there's so many times you'll see like a three-quarter shot where you see both ears or this was in the last episode or this was in Homer's Odyssey when you see like an angle of Burns's face, like it's like his nose and his upper lip are just hanging over and that's it. It's so distracting.
It is weird. It probably makes sense I don't know, from a 3D perspective, but drawn.
I could see an artist just saying, there's no other way to draw that. You want you want Burns from this angle? That's what would show. Yeah. There's no other way to draw it, and I'm not doing it.
And I ain't draw. And if you want to draw it, I ain't drawing it.
Yeah, hire somebody else to draw it if you want it, but that's the only way it can happen.
Tumultuous time.
Good luck finding a Korean who can draw a three-quarter Bart face.
I do know from the commentary that about the animation, they did say that they were really noticing, why are the trees this color? Why is all this stuff this color? And they said that they originally did it because, well, the Simpsons are yellow, so everything can be weird colors here. We can have pink gerbils. We can have all this stuff.
Yeah, the hamsters were pink.
And so then they decided by the second season, said, if the coloring of something changes your idea of what it is, then we're not changing the color. A tree can't be purple because then you might not think it's a tree.
Yeah. And I also noticed, like, throughout this first season, there's a lot of things in the background that I call stupid shit that aren't jokes. They're just like, what if I drew a weird clock here? What if I drew a weird picture here of like Homer with his mouth open? Just like, let's fill the screen with these just like, not jokes, but just like clutter, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I heard them say this on multiple commentaries and also heard Simpsons boss dude Al Jean say this on The Critic, which is the first season of an animated series is all pilot. The entire season is a pilot because they never air. You get no response, and they all kind of come back at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so when they were getting these back, they were seeing all the stuff they'd fix in season two of like, these backgrounds are distracting. You guys took too many liberties with what we told you to do. This isn't how we should have a scene. We need to talk faster. We can pack more jokes in. They learned all this in the first season, but you can't learn it from episode to episode like you would on, say, Seinfeld or Friends.
When Bob describes the stupid shit, I can see that kind of how it bled into the stuff you'd have to pause your VCR for later episodes of The Simpsons.
I mean, jokes that were worth it, not like two pictures of Marge, one of her face and one of her hair, like on the wall.
Yeah, like, that feels like a cartoonist joke. Wow. That feels like David Silverman.
I'd see that in like Mad Magazine in 1962, not in this.
Yeah,
really.
Sergio Aragonés doing that joke? Sure, but chuckle.
It would be in the margins of a Dave Berg cartoon, so you would need that to get through the day.
They instead need a painting of a boat that looks really plain. Yeah. That's much better to be there.
It's less distracting.
There was an episode where that was replaced later on, I believe.
Oh, yeah? In later seasons, they just had to be like, well, what's a thing we've never addressed that's
the origin of the
here?
Boat, right?
The origin of Homer's blue pants. That was an episode.
I did see that one.
Right you are.
I'm just saying they eventually... I'm not saying that as a definite negative. I'm just saying they... Once you get that far, you have to keep mining all this information. Meanwhile, here, everything's new. And they have these stock moments. Like I said, that one should have been Milhouse. It should have been, but they didn't know that this was a Milhouse scene. They just knew they wanted this scene, and they didn't know Milhouse was right for it. They're still just finding out so many things just by doing it.
They didn't know who Milhouse was, really.
Yeah.
Who is Milhouse? Rolling all into one. This was one of my favorite episodes as a kid, and it does not hold up for me now.
It's a great kids episode. It's you could air it on Nickelodeon almost now. Actually, you could totally air it on Nickelodeon.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, I think you're right, Henry. It does feel like an episode of Rugrats.
Yeah.
And I mean, anyone can enjoy Rugrats. It's for the whole family because it aired on VH1, but it doesn't feel as Simpsons-y as I want.
Horrendously animated by Klasky Skoopum.
I feel like they made it. Has that all been even... Have they officially said that they made it because they just wanted a Simpsons they owned, so they started with a family
thing? I'm pretty sure that was probably where it came from.
I definitely feel like there would be no Rugrats without the Simpsons.
It did have some very Simpsons-y qualities to it in the beginning.
Oh, that's another thing they do point out about cutting them slack on this, that we can watch it now and say, well, you should have done this. Yeah. And there had never been an animated sitcom like this before, ever.
Yes.
You're seeing the rules created as you watch it.
I swear I'm always keeping that in mind, which is why I'm finding this so fascinating.
It is
like
fascinating.
Even the stuff that's broken or clunky, you can see how it leads into what the show eventually
does. Yeah, I forgive all the mistakes based on what they brought us later.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're gonna be slagging on these season one episodes a lot, so hopefully you're not too bogged down with negativity, but I think we praise them equally.
I hope it gives you a good reason to revisit them.
Yeah.
Like, and not ignore them.
And when you find those moments of like, that's a good joke. That's like a joke you would have written later. Like, those are like diamonds you hold in your hand.
Looking at something incredibly subversive and out of the ordinary and trailblazing.
Oh, yeah.
And it deserves all the credit from season one.
Compared to 90s, everything else on 90s TV, so far ahead of it.
Yeah.
I think Full House was the yardstick for what a sitcom could do until this. So I guess we said our piece. Let's wrap up. I am Bob Mackey, of course, and you can find me on the internet as Bob Servo on Twitter. Chris.
Fantista on Twitter. I hope you're listening to Laser Time. I'm going to assume you are.
Yeah, I'm H-E-N-E-R-U-A-G on Twitter. And yeah, all the patrons of Patreon know my Twitter name. And thanks again, guys.
Yeah, thanks again, and just want to wrap up. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week with a new episode, and this is Bob Mackey saying thank heaven for children, but not in the gross way.